The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 198 for Monday, April 13th, 2009. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. That's John Braun. I'm Dave Hamilton. And to my right is Pilot Pete. Hi, guys.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
How are you, John?
Doing all right. Actually, you know, I think, I don't know what I'm coming down with. My voice may sound a little rough here. I don't know if it's, you know, spring has sprung or allergies or a cold or a lot of times I get bronchitis. So I hope it's not that. Ooh. So, yeah, my voice sounds a little different. But you've
I hear
taken
little,
that into consideration with your expert tuning of our audio setup.
So. I hear a little high-end raspiness on your voice, but it's good. It gives you presence and sparkle. So that's excellent. We like the presence and sparkle.
I forgot the terms that you crazy people use. Warmth? No.
Warmth?
No, not warmth.
No, it doesn't. It's actually a little harsh, but that's good.
Harsh.
That's when we use sparkle, the good kind of harsh, right?
Sparkle.
Yeah, okay. So we've got what I would consider a fairly normal show for us, in that we just have all kinds of feedback, questions, tips, comments from listeners. But I think we've got a couple of other things to go through first, and perhaps...
Yeah.
Perhaps we do. I don't know. You have something you want to do?
I should start. So here's a little surprise segment here. I was just thinking about it, and I didn't. It didn't come back to me until after the prep. I walked downstairs. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I was going to talk about this thing. So this thing is, I'm talking about the mail I got today. Now, you know, some people like mail, some people hate mail. I like mail when it's
relevant
to me.
Can I cancel the mail?
You know, I'm going to talk about that. Believe it or not.
Hmm.
Okay, we'll talk about that. So I got four pieces of thing. One is kind of Apple related and some aren't. But anyway, so I got a few things. So I got a postcard. You may have heard about this. Apple, first generation iPod Nano class action settlement. Reminder. Because I believe I got one of those as a gift and I registered it. Always register your product, folks. And apparently that's why I'm getting this thing here. So apparently they didn't. I think the gist of it is they didn't admit that it had the scratchies. But they decided to just throw a lot of money at the problem and say, well, there really wasn't a problem. I think that's kind of how a lot of these settle, right?
Right.
We admit no fault, but here's some compensation for what may be a problem.
That's right.
All right, so I got that postcard, so that's really nice, okay? So that was a good one. I'm going to fill it out. You know, it's like, I don't know what they throw at you, $25 or some, you know, something. It's better than nothing. So then the other piece I got here, and this is a mini rant. So it says on it, I know the return address because I got multiple pieces here. Official business enclosed. Now, I don't know about you, but when I see the word official, to me, that's like some kind of urgent business thing or something like that. But I already know who this is from, but I've gotten at least three others from them. And it's AT&T U-verse. And what happens, you open this up and the letter says, it's official. U-verse is acknowledged as the most popular blah, 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 blah. To me, that does not allow you to put the word official business on your mailing. That's just wrong. You're giving the whole direct mail industry a really bad name by pulling this sort of garbage. All right.
Yeah.
So U-verse, you stink in this respect. I'm sorry. I just got to say that because it infuriates me because I don't know. I mean, I don't talk about it a lot, but I do work in the mailing industry and stuff like this just bugs the heck out of me. Now, a little sideline. So a tangent off a tangent, and then I'll come back. There is a way to control your mail. And so there's a group called the DMA, the Direct Marketing Association. You may have heard of them.
Yeah.
They have gotten a heck of a lot better. They used to be not that great as far as blocking things you don't want. But what you can do now is if you go to www.dmachoice.org, you register with them. The level of granularity that they allow you to opt out of certain things, like they even have names of specific catalogs from specific companies, credit card solicitations. They give you a heck of a lot more options than I've seen them offer in the past. In the past, I think they offered it was very granular. It's like, okay, send me nothing from any of your member companies, which I don't think anybody wants because I think there's certain things that you do want. There's a lot of stuff you don't. So check it out. We'll link to it. But so they're taking a step in the right direction, I think, because...
Did you hear that sound in the background there? That clackety clack. I think the DMA Choice website brings up that clackety because I went there.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
A little finger wag at them. Don't play sounds, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But
allow me to enable it.
Yeah.
I don't like web pages.
Like,
I don't like web pages that make noises unless you explicitly enable it. And I've seen that in a lot of audio ads. You can tell.
Yep.
that somebody's talking and it says click here so you can hear this. So that's a finger wag at them. Don't do that, guys.
Right. Yeah. We at Backbeat Media won't take ads on the website that allow audio unless it's opt-in audio where you have to click a button to make it happen. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And then third and fourth piece of mail. Yes. Third, I recognize it. It's a rebate check from one of my credit cards that gives a cash award as a check. And then the fourth one is my 401k statement, which...
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I don't even want to open it. So that's what I got. So some of it was topical. Some of it was a rant and a finger wag. So there you go. Now, did you have something kind of unexpected, Dave?
I actually had something unexpected, and now I have something even more unexpected. Because when you mentioned postcards, I just couldn't help myself. There's a new app out for the iPhone, and Andrew Stone, who you've all heard me rave about how much, and I know we're not the iPhone Geek Gab, though I believe we have that domain reserved if we ever get there. But occasionally I like to talk about this stuff. So Andrew Stone makes Twittolator, which is Twittolator Pro, which is the Twitter client that I know and love on the iPhone. And I highly recommend you all check it out. It's absolutely fantastic. Really, the new version blows away the first version. But he has also been working on an app called Postcards. And what it does, it's actually really cool. You go and take a picture with your phone, right? And then you go in, and of course it reads from your iPhone's address book, which if you're synced up with MobileMe is the same as your Mac address book. So it's got all your addresses in there. And you say, I want to send this picture as a postcard to this person, type out the message, hit send. If you can, it'll charge you $2 to send the postcard. If you don't set up an account, you can buy them in bulk and get them as low as I think like $1.30 or something.
Are we talking a physical postcard?
Physical postcard. And he sent me one of these, which was really smart, right? And the first two are free, okay? But he sent me one while he was testing it. And these things are fantastic. It's nice, like good. It's almost like glossy cardstock, but really you can tell it's going to last. It's great. And the picture looks good. The message looks good. Everything is great. And you know, Lisa saw the postcard come in the mail and she didn't know what it represented. And so I explained it to her and she said, oh, well, that's a no-brainer. I'm going to download the app. So I think the app, I'm going to check here. I've got it up in the store. The app is free, of course, you know, and then it's $2 for a postcard or you know, perhaps less. You can buy a package and get them for, like I said, about $1.30. But the postcards are really nice. So
okay, because a postcard is either 27 cents or, if it's large, 42 cents. So they're taking a chunk of that there, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. They're obviously paying the postage, but then they're making some money. But they're printing up the picture and all that.
Because I think you can get postcards through iPhoto. I don't think they'll mail them for you. Mm-mm. I think they just print them up for you. Then you got to deal with the stamping or franking.
But great part is you're in the middle of Disney World. You know, you take a picture of the kids. You go pull up Grandma and Granddad's address from the address book. Wish you were here. Boom, done. You do that while you're in line for the next ride. And the postcard arrives before you get home. You don't even have to think about it. It's just done. It's actually pretty cool. I can totally see us using it. Totally see us using it.
So. Yeah, no, they offer the whole thing. Because I've seen, and you've probably seen, there are several companies that offer custom stamps where you can get same as you're talking, but it's just a stamp. But getting the whole shebang is really nice. And Pete mentioned, I've got some stuff from these guys. Amazing Mail.
Okay.com.
I've gotten a lot of trade show correspondence. When trade shows are coming up in the area, they'll use this service, and I've looked, and they have a nice web interface. You can lay out a graphic. You know, they have all different message areas, but it's pretty straightforward laying out a postcard, and you know, they take care of the postage and all that. Again, it's going to cost more than the face value of the postage,
of course,
but they do all the design and they do some nice nice printing. It looks very professional. So
cool.
We may have to look at more. This was an inadvertent, introduction to mailing, but you can do a lot of mailing related tasks on your Mac as well as Windows and stuff. So we may have to have an episode that digs into that.
Yep, you can. All right. So I got two other things to talk about. So I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I installed this great new router that I had bought, via Pete. I fried it. It fried. Can I blame
yourself?
Can I blame Pete? Certainly not.
Mine still works, Dave.
Exactly.
Well, unless you plugged power where power should not go.
Well, I went and set the the 5 gigahertz channel, right? It's the WRT600N from Linksys is the router. And I set the 5 gigahertz channel to a specific channel because I wanted it to sit in a different spot than my router at the house did. And so I set it up and it worked fine and computers connected and it was real fast. It, you know, I had it up at 230 and, you know, all that good stuff. It was great. And then the next day, about 12 hours later, the router just went offline. Well, this isn't good. So I unplugged it, let it sit for about 10 seconds or, you know, whatever. Plugged it back in, came up okay. 5 minutes later, went down. Okay, we have a heat issue, you know. And so I unplugged it, got it back up, you know, had it up long enough to change the channel back to what was normal. Actually, I think I turned off that radio. And then 3 hours later with Linksys tech support, the router never really came up again. And they're sending me a new one. So that's the good news, right? Was it me? Was it a defective radio in the router? We'll never know. But the lesson is when I get this new router, I'm going to install the latest version of the Linksys firmware on it. Then I'm going to look in the settings and see what the allowed channels are for that 5 gigahertz channel. And never will I go outside that range, even if I happen to find firmware or put something on there that that might allow me to do that. So, again, I don't know. It could have been a faulty router, could have been anything. But there's the lesson learned. So, Yeah.
Possible.
You don't know what is it, but it's something definitely fried. Cause here's, you know, with those Linksys routers, without going too much into it, cause next show, we're definitely going to talk a little bit about routers. Cause I'm doing something fun at my dad's condo in Vermont. In fact, we might have to do the next show while I'm up there, John. We need to talk about scheduling.
Vermont. Do they have internet there?
They will as of this weekend. And that's part of the story. That's right. With those Linksys routers, when they start up, for about 5 seconds during the initial boot up process, they will always answer on 192.168.1.1. And the reason for that is so that you can blast a new version of the firmware at it if the version you have on there is FUBAR. And in the course of 3 hours of troubleshooting, I only got it to answer on that at that phase once, which tells me that something in there was deeply fried. So, all right. So, before we actually get on to what I've called is going to be a normal show and isn't, we have to talk here because this is, as I said earlier, show number 198. That means in 2 weeks, if we stick to our schedule, which I believe we will from looking at the calendar, we've got show number 200 coming. And, you know, that's sort of a milestone. I mean, 198 is a milestone, frankly, but 200 holds some significance. We changed.
If you count in base 10, yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. So, you know, show number 100, I know you and I had a blast doing number 100 where we basically...
Flashback.
Yeah, our flashback show where we talked about how we met and all the computers we had. And so in the pre-show tonight, we were sort of talking about, you know, what can we do special for show number 200? And we talked about, John, you tweeted about having some of our listeners do intros, which I think is great. So we should, you know, have an intro or more. And then, you know, the good thing is I record our pre-show, John. So I'm just going to play a little bit of this. Now, it's going to sound just like it does now, but you have to know that this was recorded prior. So we will cut to the pre-show now.
A couple. We can do the kids. We can do a couple of listener ones. Oh, dude, that'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, what about a wife show?
There it is.
No.
Oh, that's it.
A live show instead?
Yeah. No, the live show where we just do it live.
Go live. Have people take phone call, put the word out tonight that you're going to do it and the word out next week that you're going to do it. And that you'll take calls. And I can even scream.
All right. Well, there we go. I might have to do a little creative editing there.
Got to keep that clean.
The pre-show doesn't always stay as clean as possible.
Oh no, it's I think it's R.
The pre-show is R-rated. Definitely R.
Got the I don't want to.
No, we didn't get the I don't want to. That's right. Yeah.
So why was Pete screaming about no wives? I don't know.
No wives. No. So we are back. Obviously, that was the I cut the pre-show off there.
Real time. We're back. Events now occur in real time.
In real time. But yeah, so I think we should do the live show. We got to figure out the technology. I'm going to reach out to our listenership and I think I think there's some easy ways to do this where we can let you in on what we're doing here live, and then
doesn't Chuck do this?
Now Victor used to do it a lot.
Victor, yeah. I thought Chuck did this too.
No, Chuck doesn't do the live thing. I don't think. Yeah. I don't think so.
He does the video thing though.
He does the video thing. That's different from live. Well,
it's for Sean. Sean does the live thing, right?
Sean,
yeah, you hung with Sean.
Sean King does the live thing. That's true. Actually, that's true. He does.
He'll help us.
Yeah.
I think he'll help us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He'd happily help us.
Set up a chat room and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Maybe we'll let him in on the
That's what we need. We need to set up a chat room. I know Victor was using TalkShoe. So somehow we'll figure that out. And
that's the one I saw. Okay. Yeah.
So we'll figure that out. So I'll have to look and see if I can find that. We'll have to play that John's little complaint about doing it live in the intro.
Yeah, I don't
because
think so.
There's a piece of it that's just fantastic, but the saucy language of our intro surprised me.
If I had started swearing, it would have been just fine.
Saucy.
Sorry, folks. It was an accident.
And before we get to the show, I ordered some RAM. You know what? Older RAM tends to get expensive quick. Because I think you and I found, Dave, so I have a circa 2005 G5.
Yep.
Right. The RAM for that, I think I bought a 2-gig set, which is 2 1-gigs. This machine has 8 RAM slots, and I think it's PC3200. I think two 1-gig chips cost about $80. Because I was looking at other places, and I think I typed in a different model that was a slightly more recent, and the chips were like $20 each. I'm like, huh? So this is the punishment that I take for trying to buy RAM for my older machine. It starts getting, it's supply and demand.
Right.
You know, the other chips are still commonly used, but as your machine becomes 3, 4, 5 years old, you may not even be able to get the RAM. So, but that's the last upgrade I think I'm going to do to this machine.
Before you kick it to the curb.
Well, I don't think I'll kick it to the curb. It'll be it's got the 1 terabyte drive. I mean, this may be the media server.
All right.
Anyways, what's
next?
Yeah,
that's actually a good idea. Yeah. So here's the thing, though. I don't know what the thing is.
Well, Snow Leopard won't run on it, so it's going to be stuck at the.
Is that what they say? Is that what they?
I'm pretty sure Snow Leopard is going to be Intel only. Yeah, which doesn't surprise me.
I think that's right. I think that sounds right. All right. Pete actually just pinged me and said we should do the first sponsor before we get to the agenda since we're so far off, but. Our sponsor for this show is Bare Bones with BB Edit, and we're going to talk a little bit about BB Edit now, but we also have a great question about BB Edit later. And you know, it's always so strange to me, John, to do questions that talk about apps from sponsors, especially when it, you know, just happens to hit when it's in the same show. But you know, I certainly don't want to penalize our sponsors for having apps that people want to talk about, so we just let it happen, and it's you know, it's normal. But obviously, Bare Bones is a sponsor. We're going to talk about BB Edit later, but we're going to talk about it now.
I think
too.
We maintain the highest ethical standards in this regard, Dave.
We try. Yeah, we definitely try. So BB Edit 9 has a lot of cool things. One of which we're going to talk about later, but some of the features that it includes are the big one for me, non-modal find, which means that you've got find and multi-file search windows that do not take over the whole UI. So you can put windows in front of them. You can put windows behind them. You can have a find that's just there. And the cool thing is when you're doing a multi-file search, you have the ability to edit in the find window. And you can also edit in folder windows. So if you open up a group of files, you can just navigate through and edit right there. You don't have to double click and open them in their own window. BB Edit 9, it's been out for a little while, but it really enhances the UI. And of course, they've done some bug fixes and point updates since then, which make it even better. One thing that's really cool, and I have to be honest, I've been using BB Edit for many years, and version 9 has been out since August, and we've been doing, you know, these ads since long before then. I use BB Edit every day, and one of the things I use it for most is opening it up, putting some text in there, doing some manipulation to the text, or even just storing text in it and then coming out and getting it. And then when I go and quit from BB Edit, of course, it asks me, do you want to save this file? And I say, no, I don't. It's just, you know, it's just scratch work. Well, BB Edit 9 has a scratch pad in it. And if you go into BB Edit 9, you go to the window menu and you choose view scratchpad, it is exactly that. It's a document that is persistent among launches, but you don't have to save. You don't have to do anything. It's just that one document that you're constantly pumping text in and out of and using without ever saving. So that's my new favorite feature in BB Edit 9. Now, BB Edit 9 is available at barebones.com. It's $125. If you're a registered owner of a previous version of BB Edit, you can upgrade for $30. And they've got educational pricing as well. So all available at barebones.com. And with that, John, I think it's time to go in and start talking about, last week we talked about the dock. Do you remember that? All the way back to last week. What's that?
To buy a duck.
No, we had duck races. Sorry. Are later. That's right. So Adam, so we asked for, well, we didn't ask for, but you folks sent in, which is great, comments and tips about other ways to manage the dock, and we'll start with Adam.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Adam calling in. I was listening to the podcast about the dock, and I had a tip that I haven't heard you guys mention yet. It's using this little program called AutoStax, and it basically allows you to create either aliases, or actually it will move any number of files that you can drag, say, like five different applications that you really like that are like, say, utilities. You can drag all five of them, you know, select all five of them and drag them in, on top of the AutoStax icon in the dock, and it automatically creates a stack in the dock. And you can set it to be like, say, aliases. That's the way I do it. And then it'll create a stack of those five applications in your dock. And it basically allows you to get dock availability to a lot of applications without having to have every single application listed there on the dock. It basically puts like lots of more applications just one more click away. And I really like it. It's called AutoStax. If you just Google it, it's free, and you should just check it out. I don't even know what I'm supposed to say at the end of these things.
You can say whatever you want, Adam. We'll just cut you off because that's about what you're about to say.
That's what we do.
That's how we roll.
But that's what you do. You have your finger on the button, Dave.
I try to. The problem is I don't always have my finger on the button. I get distracted. My ADD and my CDO
OCD
act up.
And,
no, it's, you know, CDO, John, because that's OCD in alphabetical order like it's supposed to be.
Another TLA.
All right.
Which stands for three-letter acronym. Move on.
Right. I like that. That's good. Okay, so we're moving on to Michael with Drag Thing. Michael writes, for a few years now, I've been using Drag Thing. Not only does it give you multiple docks with cool tabby things, but it allows you to put your trash icon on the desktop. I also use it to keep a list of running programs in the background on my desktop, too. Just wanted to send this along. So, enhancements to the dock and more with Drag Thing as well. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes, too. This show's been exhausting so far. Does it feel like that to you,
now,
John?
You know, another thing that I think, now, do you use spaces a lot, Dave?
That's I'll take this tangent, sure.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, I know, I've seen people, I've never got into it for some reason, but does that give you multiple docs or no?
No. Spaces gives you one single doc.
Okay, but multiple desktops.
Multiple desktops, yeah.
Right. So, okay.
This is a good thing to talk about, though.
I was just tossing around in my head, gee, wouldn't that be nice if Spaces potentially could, and maybe there's a way to hack this, give you a different dock for each pane that is part of Spaces. Just thinking about it.
Yeah, I like that idea. So, it's funny. I have a multiple monitor set up here when I'm at the office. And when Leopard first came out, I started using Spaces and really liked it in general. But in specifics, it got very quirky, for lack of a better term, dealing with the multiple displays. I mean, I finally got it to the point where it was okay. But, you know, it took a while to get it there. And so when I did my rewipe of my Nuke and Pave last year, I never bothered to set it back up. However, when I travel and I'm just on the single 15-inch screen, man, the only way I live is with Spaces. I have one space for mail, you know, and Safari, one space for my chat apps for, you know, Skype and iChat, and one space for FileMaker. And the cool thing is, you know, when I click in the dock on, say, the FileMaker icon, boom, it brings me to that space. Nothing else is in the way. I can get what I want. I can leave all my FileMaker windows arranged the way I want, and I don't have to deal with all the interleaved Safari and Mail and all those other windows. So in that sense, it's extremely handy when I travel. So for laptop users that are truly using just the laptop, I think it's invaluable, and I highly recommend it.
Nice, because you know, at work, I use my portable, which is a 17-inch Dell, and I think I have a 30-inch LCD Dell,
okay,
which makes very nice LCDs. I actually have some friends who have Macs that have Dell LCDs, because I think they pretty much use the same guts as most other people, Samsung or similar. But at work, I have two, because especially when you're developing, you need all the real estate you can get. And I kind of logically, you know, like I'll put development on one screen, and I'll put, you know, Twitter and Yammer and email on another. So it's the one is for like deep thought and the other is for like potential distractions. And
right.
Helps me just get my mind organized.
Yeah, that's good.
So same, you know, probably as you pointed out with Spaces, you kind of lay it out in a way that, well, you know, just works for you.
Yeah. There was, gosh, there's another app that I like to use and I can't think of the name of it that allowed you to, it focused you down on one program at a time and blacked out everything else. But I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Yeah, and as Pete warns, be careful if you're ADD. Don't have too many things in front of you that can distract you, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's
especially true. When I develop, sometimes I'm compiling, and the things I'm compiling are pretty big, so what are you going to do while you're waiting for a compile?
Twitter!
You see, you see, that's the big secret of software developers. Don't tell your bosses, but you know, it doesn't take that long. No, it does. No, sometimes it takes a real, real long time. I've seen massive, huge projects. But, you know, a short little prototype or something. Still, there are times when you're doing iterative development and,
yeah.
You just can't do anything else.
That's right.
Or it's lunchtime. I find, and I've looked at this, they have utilities that show your Twitter usage. And most of mine is, you know, sprinkles throughout the day. But lunchtime is when I'm eating lunch. And, you know, a lot of times I'll eat at my desk. So that's a peak. Oddly, not in the early a.m. hours like you guys, especially doing your the hockey thing isn't going to be for a while, right?
No.
He got an upgrade, right?
Well, no, his arm's still in the cast. My son broke his arm on the skate park, but several weeks ago. But the hockey season has ended anyway, but he missed the last 2 weeks of it because of his arm. Yeah, but hopefully he'll be able to do soccer. He's already been given clearance to go on the playground at school, which was huge for him. So
clearance?
That's right.
Let's not even start.
No, let's not start.
Pete knows this gig. Okay,
that's right.
Who's next?
Christopher is next. Please save us, Christopher.
Hey, guys. It's Christopher with MacWorks in Minneapolis. I had a question for you. You were talking about Text Expander, and I use BBEdit a lot. I write a lot of PHP and HTML and so on. And I really would like to save some keyboard strokes in there. And I could swear that sort of text expansion or snippets or something like that was a feature of BBEdit. I can't seem to find it, though. So if you know a little bit about that, I hope you would share that with me. This is where you cut me off.
And so we shall. So we're actually mentioning two show sponsors in one question. So yes, Text Expander will do everything that you talk about, Christopher, but in BBEdit, they have something that they call clippings. Now, it's interesting with the way clippings work, and I don't use them a whole lot, so I'm not a clippings expert, but you can assign keystrokes to specific clippings right there inside of BBEdit. They can be language specific. So, and BBEdit auto senses whether you're working in, you know, PHP or C or JavaScript or HTML. And so you could have different sets of clippings for different language sets. And there's quite a bit of flexibility there, but go ahead and look in the manual for clippings. And I believe it's at page 238 in the current version. If my research earlier today is still with me, but that's where you want to check it out. And that will do probably most of what you're looking for. And if it doesn't, combining Text Expander with it will almost certainly give you far more than you ever wished for.
Huh. Now, you know, there's another type of clipping that we'll just take a little mini tangent here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things yeah, are
no,
messed
no,
up
no,
enough.
No tangents allowed in this show. Not allowed.
And tangent. I want to remember what that is. No, we'll talk about that another time. Remember Soka Toa? Do you remember this from school?
I do, but I don't. I remember the acronym, but I don't remember what it means.
It was your trigonometric
that's
ratios.
Right.
S O H C A H T O A. So of course, tangent is opposite over adjacent.
Right.
Anyways. It was handy. Wow. So, but I noticed
the propeller on the beanie is spinning fast, folks.
Well, actually, I was talking to Jeff.
Oscar had a heap of apples, but Oscar had a heap of apples.
No, there's one
opposite
for the resistor codes, but we're not going
to.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of. Yeah,
went to school south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Actually, I did. Yeah. Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's a little draw there. All right. But I noticed that clippings, there's another type of clippings, which is a more general operating system thing. But I was just messing around with this because I saw the word. And I'm like, well, let me try this. But so if you're in TextEdit or Stickies or I think pretty much any Cocoa app and you highlight text and drag it to the desktop, it'll make something that looks like kind of a little document that you ripped off of a pad or something. I think there's actually little jaggies in it. And that's a text clipping, which I think is just something that you can in general bring into most Mac applications once you've brought it onto the desktop. But I noticed something very cool, Dave, which it's kind of smart. I was playing around with the show notes and I'm like, you know, let me highlight a URL and drag it on the desktop. When I did, it didn't come up as a text clipping. When I did get info, it came up. It was immediately obvious there was something different because it had a little at sign. And that's a web location document, .weblOC, which sometimes if you get one of those in email, it's probably because somebody dragged a URL to the desktop on the Mac and maybe on Windows and other operating systems. I think they embrace a similar concept. If you drag a URL on the desktop, it's like a bookmark.
Right.
And if you click on it, it launches the browser. Because I've seen that sometimes. I got something, especially I have some colleagues that are mainly Mac-based, and I'll get a weblock document on my Windows machine, and I'm like, what's this? But usually I think it's just the URL embedded in the file. But I thought that was a kind of neat thing that it was smart enough saying, hey, you know what what you just highlighted looks like a web address. So let me not make it a text clip and let me make it something that I think may be useful to you. So,
that's interesting. I like that.
And there may be other types of data. I'm curious. I'll have to research this more and there may be a show on this or something, but there's something in the innards of OS X that's really smart when it comes to this sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think that's true. Yeah. Especially when you're dealing with Cocoa. All right. Leaf, right? Leaf writes,
go.
I have a question about Carbon Copy Cloner. John, you use Carbon Copy Cloner, right?
On occasion.
All right, good. I love this software and has saved my butt multiple times. However, I have it set to run on a schedule, but I'm very skeptical that it isn't running. Is there a way to set up an alert or an email to tell me if the backup was successful or not? All right, John, I defer to you on this because I use Super Duper and it does not alert me, but it will alert me if it didn't run. It'll leave itself up and running and I can view the log. So go. I'll let you run with it from there.
Well, you know, there's not a lot to run with. I actually have really not done any sort of notification. They do have. Where is it? Let me find the choice here again. So a couple of things. So one, they have advanced settings. You can run a shell script before a clone operation launches or after it completes. So that's a little geeky.
Oh. Okay. So you could definitely do that and have it at the very least just pop up
right.
An alert window.
So you go to Carbon Copy Cloner.
Yeah.
Advanced settings in the Carbon Copy Cloner menu. And it has three choices here. Clone to this subfolder on the target volume. Run the shell script before the clone begins. Run the shell script when the clone finishes successfully. That could get you what you want. But then I think there was also a question. Does it put this in the console? Because if you're going to find this sort of information about why an app either has done something properly or has had a problem, you got to find it in the console. Now, fortunately, if you go in Carbon Copy Cloner, the latest version, which I just upgraded to, in the window menu is CCC log. And if you go to CCC log, it'll then open the console, and under the log files category and the subcategory of /library/logs, it will display the ccc.log file. And there's actually also a CCC stats. Okay, there's nothing in there that I recognize. That may be from before. Now, it was kind of neat because what I saw in the log file on one of my machines here, which just was kind of an interesting message, because I haven't run Carbon Copy Cloner in a while. I only really do that when I'm, you know, sending my machine off to AppleCare or something. Otherwise, I'm time capsule still seems to be working okay. I haven't had any corruption.
As far as you know.
It has not been reported. I mean, to me, the problems begin if you cannot mount your Time Machine volume
right
wirelessly, then you're in trouble. And we have several of our colleagues, other podcasting colleagues especially, run into this thing. Once the image can't mount, you're in serious trouble.
Yep.
Or potentially serious trouble. But one message in their log said, the system is going to sleep. There's nothing CCC can do to prevent it.
Oh, there you go.
Which I thought was just kind of a funny message. I mean, it's very polite, you know? The system's going to sleep. And I would assume that if there's something going on and you put the system to sleep, like backing up, it's probably going to stop.
Right.
Unless you tell it to ignore sleep, which I don't think you can really do that. So
right.
It's politely saying something's happening that I cannot deal with. And yeah. Moving on.
All right. You know, we should share our contact info because we always like to do that. And our agenda is blown to pieces here from our intro. Yeah. Well,
did we have one?
Something. Yeah, of course we did. You know, we always do.
I threw in a monkey wrench. You threw one in. Pete threw a couple in. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pete threw a big one in. I got to go edit the show now. That's not his fault. I should have listened through enough. But anyway, so if you want to contact us, feedback@macgeekgab.com is the email address to use. We are now both trying to reply from that address. So if you have a trail going with us, everyone sees it. That's the only address that goes to both John and I. So feedback@macgeekgab.com is the address to use. Please, please, please. I actually had one guy this week, and I think we've got his question perhaps even coming up. But, you know, he sent me an email weeks ago, and I put it through, and it was, you know, one of those weeks where John was doing all the show prep. So, of course, John didn't see it. And then he sent me another email this week. He's like, did you get my question? You didn't answer it. I'm like, well, A, we try, but we cannot answer every question that comes in. But we do try.
No.
You know, try. Not necessarily on the show, but perhaps via email. But you know, it's almost certainly not going to happen if you send it to one of us personally. So feedback@macgeekgab.com. Other ways of getting to us, John, could be, perhaps.
Now, if you want to call us to either try to sell us, a warranty for our car, because I got a call about that the
did
other
you?
Day.
Good. That's nice.
Thanks I hate these that. Guys. But if you want to call either me or Dave or Pete or all of us, you can pick up the phone and dial 206-666-GEEK, which is
4335. I think we could all say that in a chorus. In fact, when we do the live show in 2 weeks, we're all going to have to say that in a chorus.
We're going to have to
get this going.
You meant may do.
Victor
actually said, yeah. Help us.
I already have a response from him, I think.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm tweeting too. I'm also got OCD here. So
that's right.
What else? So we did email, phone. MacGeekGab.com. The website,
smoke
of course.
No.
Smoke signals.
We're not supporting that yet, nor carrier pigeons. They're too slow. Well, you know, if you want to do it, or old school, maybe you can mail us. No.
there's no
or Skype. There. Or you could always, there is a, via Skype, Mackie Gab. You can always give that a spin.
All right.
I think that's pretty much it. If you know Pete, and you know, you want to ask Pete to pass a question along to us if you see him. I see a lot of you guys running into each other in the New Hampshire area. It's kind of weird, Dave.
I know.
There's
it's
a
good.
Couple of people
yeah.
that we regularly follow that you seem to run into.
Yeah, it's good.
Are they stalking you?
Perhaps. It works out all right most of the time. Hmm? All right. So last week we were talking about long-haul Wi-Fi, and we mentioned a couple of things, and Mark in New York had a couple of comments. Mark is a long-time hand guy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read through his comments. I might editorialize a little bit here, but for the most part, I'm just going to try and read through. Hi, John and Dave. I'm a longtime listener and love your show. Also an avid ham and have some comments on Wi-Fi as it relates to your last podcast. Number one, the Pringles can thing is largely a myth. QST, the Journal of Amateur Radio, ran some tests and found that at 2.4 gigahertz, which is partially shared between hams and Wi-Fi, that the potato chip can had a gain of 0 dBd. That is exactly the same as a dipole. Now, that is really, really poor when you consider that you can build a dipole right onto an end connector with only two very short pieces of wire and save the 100 grams of fat. And he puts two articles in. And we're going to talk about dipoles in a minute, John, and sort of translate.
Or do we want to...
All right, we can stop here and translate this
I'll
stuff.
I'll interject and offer some translation.
Point. Yeah, please
so,
do.
First thing, ham radio is amateur radio. These are people that are licensed. Dave and I think, have dabbled in that world. I think your dad actually has a ticket. But these are people that have certain frequencies they can talk on. They'll help out in emergencies and stuff like that. But they're really just radio geeks. They like to communicate with each other on radio and do it. I mean, there are so many cool parts of it. I mean, I've heard of people doing moon bounces. And actually, back in my early days, messing with CB and other things, you can talk a really long distance using 4 watts at night, depending on the frequency. So it's a lot of cool stuff. But so some things he mentioned here. Let's see. Wi-Fi potato chip DB. No. Dipole. So he talks about a dipole antenna. And as the name implies, dipole, two poles. So this is the simplest antenna that you can develop for radio use. And we'll link to something that explains in greater detail what the heck a dipole is. But just to start there, because he mentioned it. What he's saying is basically using a Pringles can, I guess the thought is that it can kind of focus the beam. But at least with a dipole antenna, or unless you do things properly, a Pringles can is really not going to act as a very effective focuser, right, if you will.
All right. So point number two. If two guys were at line of sight apart with minimal trees in the way, two small Yagis, and again, we'll have John offer clarification on this, two small Yagis would do the job using standard routers and decent coax between the router and antenna. A mile should be child's play and 10 to 20 possible if the two guys are RF savvy, i.e. hams that run UW stuff. With exceptional locations, really good coax, dishes, and test equipment, 50 to 70 miles should be doable. John?
A little translation here. Okay, so a Yagi, what is a Yagi, you ask? And I'm going to tell you. A Yagi is a directional antenna, whereas a dipole is not really directional. A Yagi is a combination of a dipole with a directional element. And to boil that down to something practical, Dave and I, we use something called the Wi-Fire.
Right.
Which we mentioned in the past and actually reviewed, and I think we had a pretty... you know, positive experience with it, and I still bring it with me on the road just in case. But that is an example, when I research the type of antenna they have, a directional antenna for Wi-Fi. And it includes a Yagi, actually. You can't really tell, but just the fact that it has a little arrow on it and it indicates that you should turn it in a certain direction means that that will do a better job if it's pointed in the direction of where the RF source is. Now, the other thing he mentions here, now he's saying... if the two guys are RF savvy, I think what he said here, hams that run UW, I think what he's saying there is microwave, which is technically where 2.4 gigahertz is. Right? So I think the U was
that's
micro.
Right. That's right.
Sometimes that's hard to see.
Ah, thank you. Yes. Okay, excellent.
Okay, because I guess he couldn't do the Greek micro characters. UW, so that's what I get out of that.
Yes, okay.
Mew. Ah, okay. Yes. Very good. You remember your Greek.
Hey, man, between the two of us, you know, we got it all. All right. So number three, for someone setting up a Wi-Fi link in the neighborhood, I'd try using these very inexpensive LDPA antennas. And we'll put a link. I believe the website is called Kent Electronics. And one client wanted his kid's computer on the network, but the computer was two floors up and the other end of the house from the router. I took a 5-foot piece of RG8X cable with a BNC connector on one end, found an adapter to the network card, and hooked up the computer end. I then stripped and soldered the other end to the LPDA antenna. It was like I'd run an Ethernet cable as far as signal strength was concerned. The stick antenna that came with the card could just barely connect. Also, I found that 10 neighbors had Wi-Fi running, which was pretty good considering that the houses are all on 1-plus-acre lots. And then he goes on to say, there is a lot of mystery and mumbo-jumbo involved with antennas and RF. People who have not studied the topic from an electrical engineering perspective have likely not been exposed to the very basics of antenna theory and are then easily subjected to misinformation. This is even true in ham radio magazines, where companies use marketing to sell junk, which is easily spotted as junk by the RF savvy person. All right. Very, very, very cool, Mark.
Very. And in that last comment there, let's knock out a few acronyms here and, of course, link to them. LPDA, log periodic dipole antenna.
All right.
Whatever that is.
It is. So I should point out, I read it correctly both times. He actually confused it in the email. At one point, it's LDPA, and then it's LPD at the end. So I just wanted to...
Did I say it right? I think I said it right, but
did.
I found the right match.
I think you did. Yeah, I think you did.
Let's see. RG8X is a type of cable. BNC is a type of connector, which we've used.
I think that's it.
But anyways, the rest of it, we'll link to it. And yeah. So he's right a lot of times, because I remember back in when I did, and I think we called it 11 meter, which was Citizens Band Radio, which I actually fired mine up the other day. I had to go to Radio Shack to get a battery in my power mic that had died, and they got it for me. Actually, they sent me two of them, which was very nice.
Nice.
And I think you played around a little bit with that stuff too, but maximum power. Yeah, there's a lot of physics involved, and if you look at some of the things we're linked to, you've got a basic grounding in the physics, but a lot of times you got to be careful of these guys. I'll agree, is that, you know, like they'll say this much gain and this much power and this and that. You really got to be skeptical when people start tossing out numbers like that, because it's dependent on so many different things: the orientation, you know, environmental conditions, stuff like that. I don't know. Cool. Yeah. Find your local ham radio guy and, you know, buy him a pizza or something, or a six pack, and say, hey, help me design a nice Wi-Fi extender, and I think he'll help you.
Yeah. The takeaway from this is that it is Wi-Fi is far more powerful or can go far further than we all experience with the default antennas in both our computers and the routers that we, you know, the consumer grade routers that we buy. There are a lot of options. I think I mentioned last year that my uncle has two houses in Maine that are sort of separated. I think they're a couple hundred yards apart. And he did. He bought a couple of dishes, had a line of sight going, aimed them up at each other. He and his brother are both engineers, you know, and so they had a blast one afternoon setting it up and tuning the things. And now he's got a, you know, he pays for, and the whole goal was to only have to pay for a cable modem at one of the houses. And of course, that's what he did. So, you know, it's all possible, but you've got to, you said there's a lot of physics involved. I think it's all physics, John. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So anyway, that's where we are. I do want to get to, Paolo's comment, because it sort of ties into what we were talking about before, changing subjects and going back to a subject.
Okay. Good.
He says, in episode 194, John asked the audience for feedback on recent hard drive repairs done through AppleCare. And we actually got a note from an Apple genius as well that I'll sort of pepper in here. Paolo continues, well, back in January 2009, I had the hard drive acting funny and making strange noises in my MacBook Pro. I took it in for service at the local Apple store here in Austin. They kept it for 3 days and sent it back to me with a fresh new hard drive with no trace of my data. Although they asked me if my documents were all backed up before service was initiated, they did not give me any options of copying my files when they found out my hard drive had to be replaced. They just swapped it with a new one. Thank goodness I live in the cloud, and all my documents were easily restored from Mobile Me. I had to reinstall all the apps, but that was not a big deal. Just thought to share my experience with you. And to follow this up, the Apple genius that wrote me earlier this week basically said the same thing from a different perspective. It was, you know, we always ask people if they're backed up, and if not, we offer to back them up. But I think Apple will charge you, I think it's about $75 to do a backup and restore for you. But you know, there's a reason they asked this question, and it's exactly what Paolo describes. You know, if the box is checked that you are backed up, they assume that they can do whatever they want to that drive and know that they might replace that drive, even if it's in there for a logic board repair or a keyboard repair or anything. You know, if they determine, oftentimes when the machine goes into AppleCare, they do a diagnostic on everything because they don't want to see it coming back for something else. So if the hard drive exhibits any failure, they might just replace it. So this is a good PSA.
The last time that I had my machine, which was my G4, my PowerBook G4, I remember that explicitly in the instructions, because we did the whole airborne thing, the you know, overnight hokey pokey.
Right.
Six times, I think, or maybe seven. Then they gave me a new machine because they were just getting sick of me and they couldn't fix the problem. It evolved from a hinge problem into a airport problem it was terrible. But they explicitly said, look, you either back up your computer or, and I think what I did is I did a full backup.
Yeah.
Using Carbon Copy Cloner, which is ideal for these situations where you want everything on the drive.
Right. Right.
And then I think I actually formatted the drive because I didn't want, in the unlikely event it got misplaced or that drive got recycled in the wrong fashion, I think I formatted it with a fresh copy of OS X just to prove, one, well, obviously the hinge problem is not a software problem, but just because I didn't want my data floating around. And then I use the external drive, which, of course, if you have the same processor, you can use as a boot drive, for the most part, on a desktop machine. So that's how I got by, is that I had two machines at that point in time with the same architecture. So I did a full backup of my PowerBook onto an external drive, shipped it off to them for AppleCare, and then booted off that drive because I separate my usage a bit. So my portable, I do my email on, and my desktop, I typically do my iTunes and pictures and stuff on. So that worked out fine.
Cool.
So, but them not offering an option...
No.
Is that kind of what I heard or no?
Well, no. See, you got to read between the lines here because what they said to Paolo, and Paolo needed to read between the lines. He said, although they asked me if my documents were all backed up before service was initiated, right? They did not give me any options of copying my files when they found out my drive had to be replaced.
At that point in time.
Exactly. So they asked him ahead
of
time.
It wasn't in their process at that point to say, oh, now we'll
ask again. That's right. No, they asked up front, are you backed up? He said, yes. That means you are free to wipe that drive as you see fit. And that's the PSA here is make sure, because this is a show full of acronyms, make sure, you know, you answer that question truthfully. Don't just, you know, carelessly say, oh, sure, it's backed up. Know that might mean you get nothing back.
Well, because a lot of these places are literally production lines.
Oh, yeah.
Guy gets the machine.
Yeah,
okay, backup. No. Okay, next, format drive or throw drive away.
Right.
Because
right.
I've seen this actually. They have checklists. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I think the problem is, okay, they run the diagnostic software, I think. Okay, probable issue is hard drive. Okay, process is toss existing hard drive, put in new hard drive. Does it work? Yes. Okay, ship it back.
That's right. Yeah, if you watch...
Whoops, was there data on that? I don't know.
Doesn't matter. If you watch, when you do these repairs, you can pull up your repair status online, and it's updated in real time. So if
do they still give... because I remember it was actually kind of fun to watch, is that they gave a pretty good level of detail when I last had a machine done. This was a number of years ago, but it would be like, you know, being evaluated by, you know, engineer...
Right.
Diagnosing parts on order. It got not as detailed as they get, but you know, a better level of detail than I would expect to give to a consumer.
Yeah, and you can watch it online. You can watch it happen throughout the day. So, you know, if you send it in, it goes in overnight. You'll see in the morning machine received. If you keep checking throughout the day, you'll see exactly what you just said. Yeah, that whole process. And then boom, it's out the door that night. You know, if you send it in on a Tuesday, there's a good chance you're going to have your machine back by Thursday. That, you know, the turnaround is if they have the parts to fix it, in most cases, you're going to have it back, you know, within 2 days.
Yep.
But again, it's that production line. It's okay. Did they check the box? Is it backed up? Yep, man.
Now, toss the little drive. Hint, and I don't know if your experience, when was the last time you did AppleCare?
Probably about a year ago.
Okay. Because my experience was, now you're probably near an Apple store, but my experience has been.
No.
Oh, well, you're not.
Well,
then my experience, a lot of times they'll encourage you to bring the machine to an Apple store.
Yes.
If you insist, I think, or if you gently insist,
right,
they will give you an overnight box.
That's right. Yeah, they'd
and
rather
I think it
have
goes to
in.
Texas or
goes to
I'm
Austin.
Not sure where.
No, it goes to
okay,
Austin.
It's still in Austin,
yeah.
At least for portables. I think
right.
The desktop machines, they go somewhere else. But so yeah, I think
desktop machines, you cannot. Ship. I tried
even if you save the box.
I tried with my iMac and they said we have no
what
we
what
have no facility
about?
For that. You have to bring it in somewhere, and so I brought it into
it. Got are you serious? It got shipped to you from Apple in a nice box that was probably well
padded. They don't have a repair center to ship it to.
Really?
Yeah, no, I had to. I brought it into to
so
Mac.
Those they do in the Apple stores.
Well,
in a service facility somewhere.
I brought it to Mac Edge in Portsmouth, and those guys are great. I mean, I really like Mac Edge much better than the Apple store because they know me when I walk in, and they know to believe me when I, you know, I mean, they know to believe me when I've troubleshot stuff. I mean, the conversation is a fairly no. It's not even a do you know who I am? It's just a. Okay, yeah, we know this guy knows how to troubleshoot, so we're going to listen to what he says. It's great.
Well, if you, well, Part of it is the secret geek handshake, which we really can't.
We can't even. If there was one, part of it would be the secret geek handshake. If in fact there was one, and we cannot confirm or deny the existence thereof.
I'm already resigned to the fact that my tires are probably slashed right now.
That's right.
For just even mentioning the unmentionable.
This might be the last show John does with us, folks. And I think at this
point, where are we? Is this it?
Exactly where we are.
We are at... Oh, man, that just flew by.
Yes.
It was like a little Mac party.
It was.
Yeah, so the goal
we got to
make number 200 more fun than 198.
It's always possible. So number 200, give us an intro with the date or without the... Actually, without the date.
No, do it with the date. Commit us to
whatever.
A date.
We'll clip it if we need to.
Yeah.
But I think we have a lot of candidates for...
It's fine. We can do a whole show of intros.
No.
Oh.
There should be some fun ones. There's some pretty creative
I'm sure there'll
there.
Be some great ones. Well, we'll certainly do at least one up front.
All right. You know what I'm going to say?
Intro, and then we might have a bunch at the end. Some runners up.
Maybe some outros.
Some outros.
I was going to say that. That's what I was going to say. Give us intros minds, and John. Outros.
Great minds, John.
Yeah.
Like you know what? I don't even have to be here for show 200. You guys can just do it. I can produce the show. I'll leave my mic off. I can run all the knobs. I can do the fun stuff.
You know who else is hitting 200?
Who's that?
No, her show.
Be careful when talking about a lady like that.
Oh, man.
Allison, right? The Silicast.
Yeah.
I think she's coming up on 200, so that's really cool that we're both reaching this,
Milestone.
Yeah. 206-666-GEEK, which is 4335.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com or MacGeekGab on Skype. You can go to the iTunes store and write a review. We like that. I can hear things skipping a little bit. I don't know what's going on with the audio here. Who knows? I make no promises. iPhoneAlley.com is where...
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. CashFly provides all the bandwidth at CashFly.com. iPhoneAlley.com is where Michael Johnston hangs out when he's not doing this. Podcast Marketplace, A2 Desktop Speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit 9 from Barebones Software, Text Expander from Smile on My Mac, and Notebook from Circus Ponies, all through Backbeat Media Podcast Network. And I am going to cue up the outro before this thing falls apart on me.
Aye, Captain, she's going to...
she can't hold
out much more.
So why did you even print it in general? That's what I want to know.
It's more a guideline.
I got to make an effort to look like we're organized. Look, folks, we come here every week. We have a lot of fun, but one thing we make sure we never do is to get caught.
Made up.